Yes, this is Connections on MSONewsSports.com. I'm Rick Moore, along with our producer and engineer, Bill Proposky. Bill Newell, Josh Arnold, both off today, but we've got a pretty decent program lined up, methinks, and we'll get to that in just a second. First of all, want to mention the weather. Be careful out there on the North Shore. It's kind of a weird day this morning with snow initially and then sleet and freezing rain, and now it appears to be just rain, at least on Cape Ann. So be careful. Take a little extra time and watch out for the other guy, as they say. As pretty messy out there, and I'm not going to get into the weather forecast, but you can check it out on our website under North Shore today. All right, so this morning we will start off. I'll have to take a quick break here to line up my phone call here, but we will start off with our current events talk, and we're going to have a guest host this morning, guest co-host with Greg Verga. He's a former Gloucester City Council member, also the host of Unfinished Music here on MSO. Also be checking in just a little while with Jim Berry. He's going to be leading a winter birding walk in Ipswich on February 17. Fascinating man who's put a lot of fascinating work together that we're going to talk about. We're going to follow that up with something of interest, methinks, also. I don't know why I said that word twice. Merrimack River Eagle Festival coming up. We'll talk to David Moon, who is the director of the sanctuary up there in Ipswich, the Joppa Flats at Newburyport, rather, not Ipswich, but at Newburyport. And then we'll be chatting with Natalie Blue and Madeline Pario of The Artful Life. They are expressive art therapists, and they have a fascinating story to tell, along with the move that's upcoming for them from Beverly to Salem. So let me take a quick break to make my connections here. We'll be right back. This is Connections on MSO News Sports.
I'm Bob Gillis, president of Cape Ann Savings Bank, serving the Cape Ann community with stability and commitment for over 170 years. Since 1846, our customers have relied on our local bank service and big bank benefits. Stop by our offices or call to talk about your banking needs at 978-283-0246. Built on community, CapeAnnSavings.Bank.
Member FDIC, member DIF, equal housing lender.
Gloucester's Walter Wilkins Insurance Agency is teaming up with Columbia Insurance to deliver a full line of products, personal home and auto policies, as well as a full line of commercial coverage for business owners, including commercial property and commercial vehicle coverage. Wilkins partners with respected companies such as Plymouth Rock, Quincy Mutual, Commerce, and Safeco. For City of Gloucester employees, there are discounts on auto and home policies. Wilkins Insurance is located at 186 Main Street, Gloucester. Now partnering with Columbia Insurance, serving the North Shore.
Alrighty then, this is what happens when I'm flying solo. I press all the wrong buttons, dial the wrong numbers. But I finally made connections with Greg Verga. Greg, former city councilman in Gloucester, real estate broker up in Gloucester, and also the host of Unfinished Music here on MSO News Sports. Greg, good morning. Welcome back.
Good morning. Thanks for having me back.
Well, you know, so much going on, and ordinarily Bill Newell fills this role as our bat around topics on the North Shore or topics that are of interest to people on the North Shore. And I think it would be prudent to start with what happened this week. And I want to ask you a question about the impeachment process or what developed this week. And as I think we both know, we're both kind of middle of the roaders, neither on the left nor on the right. And I don't think we're affiliated with either party. But let me ask you a question. What's your opinion, Greg? Do you think that our nation, the Constitution, government, or what, as in danger or as bad as the Democrats portray it, or is it a nothing burger as the Republicans portray it?
Well, I would definitely say it's not the nothing burger. And I'd say if it's not as bad as the Democrats are portraying it, it certainly has the potential to get there. You know, we have a president who's demonstrated time and again that he is, in his own little mind, he's above the law. I mean, he's stated, you know, his interpretations of this Article 2 that he can basically do whatever he wants. So I think it was important that the Democrats, or the House, go ahead and impeach him to sort of at least put the brakes on. I mean, everybody knew, you know, that there was no way they were going to get 67 senators to vote to convict him. So, from day one. But I think that if they had just ignored it, that would have, you know, he basically got a little bit more than a slap on the wrist. If he got zero, you know, sort of pushback, who knows what would have happened next.
I think,
and, you know, this is an election year, so he's already tried to recruit one country to help him out. Who knows what would have been next?
I think there are two things that are kind of fascinating that developed was the Democrat, I think it's mentioned from Virginia, who's a moderate, voting in favor of acquittal, I believe. I'm not 100% sure of that, but he said he was going to.
Not acquittal. No, he did vote. All the Democrats, all 47, did vote for both articles.
Okay, so Manchin did not vote for acquittal, but as he said, he might. But on the other hand, Mitt Romney did vote to convict on the Republican side, which is, I think, rather interesting, and it's certainly going to put him in trouble with the Republicans and with Trump. But the fact that some Republican senators, and not all of them are retiring, but some of them did say that, you know, he did do wrong. It was a bad mistake. He shouldn't do that. And at least, at the very least, there's a little bit of concern that's beginning to bubble to the surface here in terms of the total power that this president has.
Right. And you know, in the past, the people would, how it's supposed to work, the party leadership gets together and says, here's the things we stand for. This is our platform. And then the membership votes on it. And then if you feel you're more aligned with that their policies, you know, you register as a Democrat or as a Republican. Now it's basically just whatever Trump says. I mean, for instance, the $1 trillion budget deficit, you know, if this were under Clinton, you know, Bill Clinton or Barack Obama, they would have been all over it that, you know, can you believe this deficit spending? I mean, deficit spending was just like a complete sin. Now it's fine. They're just completely ignoring it. So the typical things, that would have been in the Republican platform or the Republican talking points have just gone out the window because it's just whatever the whim. The new policy setting mechanism is whatever's tweeted.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whatever kind of brain fart the president has each day and he punches in or has his aides punch in, usually the ones that are, you know, coherent and spelled correctly, probably his aides did, that's the new policy.
Yeah, he actually tweeted something recently that said, "Okay, this is I'm giving you official notification via Twitter." So, okay.
Right.
All right. Well,
and I have to say, I hope that, you know, I don't know if Joe Biden is eventually going to be the nominee or not, or the president, but I think he hit the nail on the head when he said this, i.e. this presidency, is an anomaly. You know, and you know, once we get him out, the next person has to come in and basically try to get us back on course.
Well, that could be, Greg, but also you've got precedent now where, you know, a Democrat could go off the rails in much the same way.
Well, that's true. Yeah, I recently put a post on Facebook about a call to the GOP senators. It was, hey, GOP senators, if you're buying the BS that Alan Dershowitz is saying, remember what he said, basically if whatever he does that's in the best interest of the country, he said that being reelected was in the best interest of the country.
Right.
It's not illegal. So I was reminded that someday we'll have a Democrat as president.
Yeah.
And now, as you said, the precedent has been set for the president.
Well, we may have a Democrat president someday. That remains to be seen. Greg, let's switch a little closer to home quickly here because I've got to get to my next interview. But up in Gloucester, there seems to be a tremendous push for a new school, replacing two schools that there are some people up in arms about it, but it seems to be a runaway freight train that this will happen. Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, well, first of all, I mean, as the former 8-year member of the school committee and the former chairman of the school committee, it's obvious we need new schools. I mean, we built a batch of schools, we glossed her back in the turn of to run the 1900s, you know, late 1800s, early 1900s. Then we built another batch in the late 40s, early 50s, and then there was nothing except for that, O'Malley. So nothing happened for basically 50 odd years, and so the time came that the Truman era West Parish School rose to the top of the list because it was just so far gone. And the thing about that was we had debt falling off of, debt service that was falling off. So we were able to just say, okay, now that we don't have to pay that mortgage, we can now pay for the mortgage for this new school. We didn't have to ask for a debt exclusion from the voters. This new school is a different story. It's going to have to go to the voters. And I think it's been maybe not handled as well as it could have, because first they were proposing one of the options was building right next door to the school we had to sell, which is Fuller School. And, why don't we hang on to 4 acres? We might need it in the future. So now we don't need it. So we sold it off. So now you have people saying, fighting to save Green Street Playground, which is that spot next to Fuller. You have people fighting to save Maddox Field, which is the field adjacent to the current school. And then now you have a new group that's fighting to get it in East Gloucester. So it's going to be a mess. I mean, they've got to come up with a coherent strategy, and because eventually they're going to need to get 51% of the voters to approve the funding.
Very interesting. One more quick question, Greg. You're being in real estate, and I just thought of this. There are houses on the North Shore that have been around for hundreds of years. I mean, hundreds of years. They're still functioning. They're still safe. How come schools can't do that?
Well, the difference is the schools weren't built for today. They just weren't. I mean, and the older schools that, like what was Maplewood School and East Gloucester School, they were multi-level. So certainly not ADA compliant. Just not set up for the modern classroom. I mean, they're small rooms and not made with the amount of enough parking or enough circulation for busing. So the way it is now is these new schools are designed to last at least 50 years. And I think that's a reasonable expectation from the community, is that, every 50 years, every two generations, you're building a new school. We just sat and ignored it for, 60 or 70 years, kept putting Band-Aids on. And, eventually the Band-Aids are going to just peel off.
Well, thanks for, something fell down from the roof there.
No, I had I hit something with my elbow and it fell.
Okay. Hey, Greg, thanks for substituting for Bill Newell. Appreciate it. Stay in the bullpen and keep us updated on unfinished music.
Oh, yeah, actually, I just had a show yesterday. I'm editing it now. It'll be enough a file to you in the next couple of days. It was Totality, so they can check out some videos on the Unfinished Music Facebook page in the meantime.
Can't wait. All right, Greg, thank you so much. Talk to you later.
See you. Bye.
Take care. That is Greg Virga, former city councilman in Gloucester, also former school committee chair. Forgot about that. And current real estate broker up in the city. And kind of in the middle of the road explaining things to me. Appreciate it. We're going to take a break here once again. When we come back, we'll be checking in with Jim Berry of the Essex County Ornithological Club. Hope I said that right. Be right back.
Harrington Trophy has been rewarding the North Shore for over 30 years with quality custom awards, screen printing, embroidery, and more. We pride our family-owned business on our exceptional customer service and quality products for the right price. Custom t-shirts, sweatshirts, warm-up suits, hats, along with the area's top trophies, plaques, glass awards, we are the one-stop shop for end-of-the-year banquets or advertising your small business through apparel. Come see us at Harrington Trophy, Chestnut Street, Lynn, or harringtontrophy.com.
Enjoy the taste of her all year round at Cherry Farm Creamery. Pick up an ice cream cake for that special occasion. Cherry Farm Creamery offers the best ice cream right off Route 128 on Conant Street in Danvers. Or visit them at cherryfarmcreamery.com. Catch the big names in North Shore news and sports on MSO News Sports Podcasts, the North Shore's podcast leader for both news and sports features, connecting you to the North Shore.
All right, we're back now, and it's my great pleasure to introduce to you Jim Berry, who is with the, now I got to say this right, Essex County Ornithological Club, a very experienced field ornithologist, and has a lot of great information to pass along to us. Good morning, Jim.
Good morning. How are you, Rick?
Very well, very well. This weather is okay with me. I'm a skier, so if it stays cold, I'm a happy guy. What does it do to the birds? But more specifically, let me ask you, Jim, about what it is you do with the ECOC, because I know in our warm-up talk you mentioned the research that you do, and we're also going to talk in a little while about the Winter Birding Walk. But tell me a little bit about what it is you do with the club and some of your research.
Well, the ECOC meets monthly at the Peabody Museum in Salem. It's not that active a club in, outside the meetings. It doesn't do many field trips. But I was a president for a while. I've been on the council, so you know, it's a low key kind of bird club. The field trips are done mostly by the Brookline Bird Club, which is much bigger and covers all of eastern Massachusetts. So I'm leading a bird walk later this month on behalf of both of those clubs.
Yeah, that will be on Monday, February 17, according to the ECOC website. And it will be starting, I don't have the start time here, but we can talk about that. But it will be, you'll be meeting at former Town Hall parking lot in Ipswich on Routes 1
through 8 o'clock.
Okay, 8 o'clock.
Yeah,
all right.
Yeah.
So before we get into your information in depth here about your research, can you tell me a little bit about what the Winter Bird Walk will be, what it is that you do, and maybe some of the sites that walkers will be looking for?
This walk is usually for raptors, which are around in the winter, for northern songbirds that migrate down here for the winter, and various other birds. It depends on the weather and where we go.
Mm-hmm.
Like I usually start out in the Appleton Farm grass rides in Hamilton, and we look in the conifer groves there for owls. We get barred owls in there, horned owls, occasionally long-eared owls or saw-whet owls.
Wow.
And then we'll go look for maybe waterfowl at the Neck, Jeffrey's Neck in Ipswich, or maybe we go to the town farm, which is the former dump. And that's good for sparrows, field birds, and so forth. So it depends on the habitat. And we go where the there's no real plan, but we just go at various habitats and look for various kinds of birds.
Now, obviously, you have a lot of people who are experienced at this kind of thing, and you have people who are maybe not experienced. I mean, is it open to anyone? For example, myself, I'm just a, you know, I'm a total neophyte. I'm a total layperson, but it sounds like a great thing to do.
Yes, these field trips are always open to beginners. They're always free. They're always, I mean, some of them are targeted for beginners, but mine are always open to anyone who wants to come.
All right, that sounds good. And we talked a little bit when I called you last week about some of your research, and again, that is fascinating to me because you've been doing this for a while. Tell me about the research of what you've done here on the. I'm guessing it's the entire North Shore, but at least up in the Newburyport Ipswich area.
Yeah, I'm writing a book on the birds of Essex County. So I've birded all over this county. That's where most of my birding is done, except when I'm traveling. And I'm writing a book on the birds of this county. I've finished it. I'm tidying up the loose ends now, and then I'm going to submit it to a publisher. And it's not a how to find birds or how to identify them. It's treatment of each species in a historical sense. In other words, has the population increased over the last century? Has it decreased? Has it stayed the same? Why? And I'm comparing. My baseline is the book. By Charles Wendell Townsend from 1905, The Birds of Essex County. So that book is badly out of date, and I'm in effect updating that, but my book will be a lot longer and a lot more thorough than his was.
Have you gotten into the technological age here with the technology of putting everything into a computer, or do you do much like I do sometimes, just write it in a notebook?
I write. When I'm in the field, I just take notes on the numbers of each species I see. Sometimes I write behavioral notes in the field, but I can remember those when I get back if significant things have happened. Then I enter my lists in the computer on a software program called eBird, which is run by the Cornell Lab of Ornithology, and which is a worldwide database, and they have millions of checklists entered now. It's been around since about 2002. So that's the most thorough database of bird sightings in the world or that's ever been. And so that's how I store all my information.
We live in in West Gloucester, and we go out and have coffee every morning when we can, when it's not raining or snowing. But even in the wintertime, and we have a bunch of bird feeders out back, and I don't know how many species we have, but I want to say it's just in our backyard, you know, maybe close to a dozen. And we're in a pretty populated neighborhood in terms of homes and everything. So is there hold on a second here. Are there species that are particular to Essex County, or is it just a wide swath here? Birds come and go.
The latter. There are no birds endemic to Essex County. That's too small an area. Birds have wide ranges. Many species of birds have ranges that cover North America or cover the world at certain latitudes, and there are almost no species whose range is as small as a county or even a state. A couple endemic birds in California that don't get outside of it, but I'm not aware of any birds in Massachusetts that are endemic to the state or even to New England. Birds come and go. Migrants come north in the spring, south in the fall. Some birds don't migrate. They're here all year. I hope that answers the question. The birds' ranges are generally pretty big.
Well, you know, it does answer the question, and thank you for not saying it was a stupid question, because by your answer, obviously, it's something that I should know, just by looking at things and being a semi-educated person. Jim, can you tell me anything else about the walk in particular on February 17? And I'm asking in terms of those who might not have done this before. Obviously, you want to dress warm and that kind of thing, but you bring binoculars, cameras, and stuff like that?
Yes, that's a good question. You have to dress for the weather. So in the winter, that generally means some waterproof boots or hiking boots, depending on how much snow there is. You want to dress warm in layers, and then bring binoculars, a camera if you want to take pictures. We sometimes get close enough to birds to take pictures. Owls especially will just sit there and look at you.
Yeah.
So they're photographable if they're visible,
mm-hmm.
and if we find any. Binoculars and cameras are the only equipment you'll need. Obviously wear gloves and warm hat, you know, you don't want heat escaping through your head. So I think that's and water. That's an important thing to bring. This is only a morning trip, so
right.
I don't tell people to bring lunches unless they want to. They can eat lunch when they get done with the trip.
All right, so you'll be meeting Jim Berry on February 17, 8 a.m. to noon at the former Town Hall parking lot in Ipswich for what should be a really, really cool morning. With more than one meaning, a cool morning that week, that day. And, Jim, I want to thank you so much for taking the time. We should mention that if people want more information about either the ECOC or the Brookline Club, what's the best way for them to find out?
Well, the ECOC has a website, and the Brookline Bird Club has a website, and I don't have them handy, but if they just put in Essex County Ornithological Club, mm-hmm. or Brookline Bird Club, they'll come up with those websites, and they have the field trips listed with times and places to meet and so forth. The Brookline Bird Club does many trips, couple hundred trips every year, so there is, and they are year round, so there are plenty of trips to choose from, depending on where you live and where you want to go and how much you want to do.
Okay, Jim, I appreciate it. Thank you very much. Stay warm, stay dry, and stay in touch.
All right, Rick, thanks.
Thank you very much. That is Ornithological Club. We are Connections on MSO News Sports. I'm Rick Moore. Coming up next, we'll be talking with David Moon of Joppa Flats, and I'm going to ask about the Merrimack River Eagle Festival, because that's what I'm pumped up about. Let me take a break, and we'll be right back. You're listening to Connections here on MSO. We'll be back.
You're
You'll love the Bradford Tavern in Rowley, as they feature a menu to please everyone. Start your meal with your choice from a dozen delicious appetizers. There are also soups and fresh salads. Dinner selections include burgers, sirloin tips, chicken parmesan, chicken piccata, and then there's seafood, clams, haddocks, salmon, lobsters, and fish tacos. Plus a wide selection of sandwiches and wraps. Let the Bradford Tavern host your events or functions set in unique spaces. Open 6 days a week, Tuesday through Sunday. The Bradford Tavern, Route 133 Rowley and BradfordTavern.com.
Hi folks, this is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. Professional builders and remodelers choose Anderson Windows more than any other brand in the United States. They do so because Anderson Windows and patio doors offer beautiful natural wood interiors, low maintenance exteriors, and outstanding energy efficiency. See the complete line of Anderson Windows at any of our three locations in Beverly, North Reading, or Plaistow, New Hampshire, or at MoynihanLumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we better up.
Check out live sporting events on MSO News Sports and exclusive interviews with coaches and players. When it comes to local news and sports, MSO News Sports keeps you connected to the big stories.
All right, we're back now. We're still talking birds, more or less. We're going to be talking now with David Moon of Joppa Flats Sanctuary. It's an Audubon Society creation, and he's the director up there. I believe it's in Newburyport. Good morning, Dave.
Good morning.
I tell you what, David Moon is just a great name for someone who works in science. I love it. It's awesome.
Yeah, I've heard that one.
That is way cool. Well, David, first of all, thank you for taking the time and for getting back to me when I asked about this. I think I mentioned to you before that my wife works in Newburyport, and one of the sites, as I was telling Jim, we sit out back every morning that we can all year round. Before we get ready for work, have a cup of coffee, have our patio heater on out there in cooler weather, and we watch the birds come to our bird feeders. And my wife and I both have never seen an eagle, at least one of us, until last week. And I've always wanted to see a bald eagle, and in fact, they are somewhat present here in Essex County, or at least along the shoreline in up in Newburyport. And I didn't know that. So when I started looking about, Googling about eagles, I came across something called the Merrimack River Eagle Festival 2020. And that's where I want to start. We'll talk about Joppa Flats in general in a minute, but please tell me about this Eagle Festival.
Well, we started the Eagle Festival many years ago because the lower Merrimack River is a place where bald eagles concentrate in the coldest part of the winter. The reason is that their primary prey is fish. And eagles have made an incredible recovery since the banning of DDT back in the 70s. Their population had declined to where it was really hard to find an eagle in the Northeast. So now they really are still recovering. Their population is still increasing because of one law that banned a chemical that was really problematic for a lot of birds that ate fish. And so now there are resident pairs of eagles that spend their entire life. They don't migrate. They stick around in the lower Merrimack, and that number seems to keep increasing year to year. And then in winter, when it's really cold up north of here and even just inland, when lakes and rivers that the eagles that live there would be depending on to get fish, when they freeze up, eagles will come to the mouth of the Merrimack, which is a traditional place for them because the current is very strong and there's also the influence of salt water that comes in with the tide. So between the strong current and the saline water, it stays open and eagles can come and forage for food. So we set up the Eagle Festival as a wonderful event where people can come and be sure to see wonderful stuff. There are a lot of different opportunities to see wildlife event.
And we can get into that a little bit more, but is it true hunting them or shooting them?
Well, long ago, there were ideas about pretty much all winged predators and predators in general that they were just bad for people, for agriculture. And so, you know, just the persecution of predators was a routine part of our culture. And that has changed dramatically in past decades, both through federal protection as well as through eventually kind of a growing understanding that a lot of ideas about predators, both mammals and birds, were really kind of unfounded. So we see a lot more. We don't see people shooting predatory birds really much anymore. Really, it's a very anomaly type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
That has been something that has been a good change in our culture.
Absolutely. Now, I've seen a big owl in flight in West Gloucester. I've never seen an eagle. And are eagles bigger than owls?
Much bigger. The wingspan of a bald eagle will, when it's fully grown, which most birds, if they're fully grown and can fly, are their full size. They don't sort of get bigger as they get older. So once they can fly, they're their full size. And bald eagles have a wingspan of between 6 and 9 feet.
Yikes. Okay.
Yeah, it's really big.
Whoa.
They're large. The females are larger, and overall, the birds are larger the further north you go. So eagles are bigger in Alaska, for instance.
Oh, man. All right. That's fascinating stuff. I appreciate this, Dave. Now, one more question about February 15. What's the best way for people to get information about this? And I'm presuming it's open to the public, the Merrimack
Absolutely.
River Eagle
yeah,
Festival?
This is a big event. And so many, many people come to Newburyport because we have opportunities all over town. Principally, we have three kind of headquarters spots, which are City Hall in Newburyport, where we have two live raptor shows that are put on by a professional rehabilitation organization that does a lot of education. This year, Mary Beth Kaiser of Horizon Wings will present two educational programs at City Hall with live raptors. And then at our site here, on the way out to Plum Island at Joppa Flats Education Center, we also have lots of different types of opportunities for adults and children, and we also will have little short live raptor presentations with smaller birds, owls, and things like that. And then across the street, there also will be live raptor shows at the Parker River National Wildlife Refuge headquarters. We work on this program with Parker River National Wildlife Refuge. So they help to sponsor it and to put on programming. So there's those three sites where you can go indoors and see raptors that have that are going to be described and shown, and then there are opportunities to go out in the field up and down the river where we have stationed volunteers with spotting telescopes to show people eagles and other wildlife.
I'm just shaking my head in amazement here. I never knew about this, and I'm so glad that I do now. What are some of the other things that the Joppa Flats Sanctuary does?
Mass Audubon has 20 sanctuaries across the state, and this one is somewhat unique because while we do what most of our sanctuaries do in terms of all kinds of programming about nature for adults and children, schools, camps, that sort of stuff, we have a very large and robust program for adult education in bird watching. And the reason that Joppa Flats was created around 20 years ago was to have a place at one of the best birding locations in the Northeast, which is the general area of Parker River National Wildlife Refuge, Plum Island, and the towns of Newburyport, Newbury, and this vicinity. So people come from all over New England, all over the Northeast, you know, on a kind of constant basis to see birds here. It's just known by birders as really one of the better places to go. And that's true at all different seasons. So there's really good stuff throughout the year, really different stuff throughout the year. So Mass Audubon set up this place where we could have a really deep and varied curriculum for adults in bird watching. The most common thing people do is to come on Wednesday mornings for a three-hour outing. We also have a drop-in walk on Saturday mornings. And then there are special outings and trips that range from day-long trips around our region to week-long trips around the country and around the world.
Unbelievable. That's amazing. And I'm also I'm looking. I actually just, to find out about this, I Googled Merrimack River Eagle Festival and sent me to massaudubon.org, specifically to the Joppa Flats Education Center. And you also, you allow for party and function rentals. You've got a summer camp. This is quite a big deal here.
Well, we're a busy place, and we've got a beautiful spot here on the bank of the Merrimack River. The Joppa Flats is named after a big tidal mud flat that is really quite large at near the mouth of the river here. And that spot, or that area, I should say, is in one part of the year, in the late summer and early fall, is a mecca for migrating shorebirds. So sandpipers and tall waders come through in thousands, and birders have always come here to see that. So this spot had a restaurant back in the day, and that was, I think, either going out of business or something along that line, but Mass Audubon bought the site, which is just a beautiful outlook on the birds that come through the Merrimack River. And so at this time of year, there have, in some really, really cold winters, there have been up to 25 bald eagles here.
Wow.
In this vicinity. And, you know, you could just guarantee them. There aren't that many this year, but on the way to work the other morning, I'm not making this up, I saw four bald eagles just driving from Amesbury, which is part of our zone for this festival, to our site. And yesterday, I took people out for our weekly Wednesday morning outing, and we had four wildlife refuges.
You're killing me, man. So, you're killing me. Okay.
But there are bald eagles around this year. It's a pretty nice number, and we're pretty confident that people have a good chance of seeing them. We don't guarantee it, but if people visit the many sites where volunteers are waiting up and down the river, they have a pretty good chance of seeing an eagle if they give it some time on that Saturday. But to participate, people can come to any of the headquarters sites, our site or City Hall in Newburyport, or the refuge headquarters across the street from us, and get a map of all of the different places where we've got volunteers, and then just go on their own and visit those sites using the map. We also have bus tours for folks that would like to have to go out with a leader, and so people can register for those bus tours. So there's really a different way to participate for everybody, with the live shows and all the activities in these two centers, the two headquarters, and so it's a real lot of fun.
All right, anybody listening to this program, excuse me, I have connected, I have linked to the Joppa Flats website, so all you have to do is click on the link right here as you listen to this, or at any point in the future. And I have one more question, David, that comes from, again, a person totally ignorant of this. Where do little tiny birds go, like sparrows, in a storm? If it's a really high wind storm, 60 miles an hour like our northeasters, how do they take care of themselves?
Well, they shelter in place for the most part. If they're a resident species, they don't really want to have to go away and come back. So for the most part, they shelter in place. However, migratory birds get out of town. So if birds are migrating, which they do during the time of year where the biggest storms that might happen along the eastern seaboard are going to occur, which is hurricane season, they'll veer and take a different route slightly to try to avoid storms like that. But resident species have to make it through, and they have to find a sheltered spot where they're going to be safe, and that's what they do. And yet, we know that storms cause mortality. I was down in Texas with a trip that I lead down in South Texas right after a really strong storm. I think that one was Harvey, came ashore as a Category 4 storm, and it was one that was famous for flooding Houston. And I got there, and a lot of the resident birds that people were familiar with right on the coast were just not there. However, birds will recover. They have adapted to respond to mortality like that, and they'll have extra young and take the spaces that birds had before, and within a few years, their populations will recover.
That's tremendous. Anything else you want to mention, Dave, about Joppa Flats?
Well, I just would like to say that we're open 7 days, or 6 days a week. We're closed on Mondays. And anybody can stop in and find out what's going on if you have an interest in birds and want to start learning. There are lots of different opportunities. And we're also really getting into looking at what's happening with sea level rise. We're right on the water. We're probably the lowest site in Mass Audubon's system, closest to the sea level. And we're looking at what's coming and really wanting to focus on strengthening salt marshes up and down our coast so that we can adapt and respond and become resilient to the changes we see coming.
So more on this at some future point. David, thank you so much for taking the time, and I hope that you'll stay in touch and we can do this again.
All right. Thanks very much for getting in touch.
Thank you so much. Have a great day.
You're welcome. You too.
That is David Moon, who is the director of Joppa Flats. It's an Audubon sanctuary, actually located on Plum Island, I believe. But we've got the link right there on our website, and all you have to do is click on it, and you'll go right to the Merrimack River Eagle Festival and get more information as well. Still to come, we're going to be checking in with Natalie Blue and Madeline Pario. Rather an interesting story about what they do. They have a program called, a business actually, called The Artful Life. Each of them is the co-owner, and each is an expressive art therapist. So you'll want to stay tuned for that. This is Connections here on MSO News Sports. I'm Rick Moore, along with our producer and engineer, Bill Proposky. Bill Newell, Josh aren't off today, but they'll be back with us on Tuesday.
This season, start with a winning mortgage rate from your hometown team. Whether you are thinking about buying a new home or condo or refinancing your existing one, our loan rates are among the lowest anywhere. Check out our full menu of rates and terms and apply online 24/7 at institutionforsavingsloans.com. institutionforsavings.com, member FDIC, DIF, equal housing lender.
We're back now with Natalie Blue and Madeline Pario, who are the members representing the Artful Life. Do I have that right? Is that what it's called, the Artful Life?
Yes, the Artful Life Counseling Center and Studio is our full name.
Okay. And when I go on the website, it's kind of intimidating because there are all these very attractive women with all these degrees who want to help people. And the website itself looks pretty amazing. But to get to the point here, let's start with what you guys do, who you are, and how you got started.
Thanks. So we are a group of both licensed mental health counselors, so we all have master's degrees, and then all of us have some kind of degree in expressive therapy. It could be art therapy, dance and movement, drama therapy, and it's all lumped under expressive arts therapy. Natalie and I opened the Artful Life officially as a group practice in 2016 here in Beverly. We've been working together for about 4 years before that, and we started hiring our own employees, and we really, I think what we saw on the North Shore was that there was a gap of services, particularly using the expressive arts to help with clients, and we saw a gap, and we often, you know, both of us have experience working in the community mental health field, and we were often the expressive arts therapist in the agency. We would be, you know, toting our art bags back and forth to work with different clients. And so we wanted to open a practice where expressive arts therapists could really have a full range of creative materials to do their work with clients, and that clients could get the full benefit and range of the expressive arts therapy that we offer.
All right, before I ask you about expressive arts therapy, we're talking with Natalie Blue and with Madeline Pario, who are the co-directors and founders of this amazing service. what exactly does it mean to be a mental health counselor? Because I want to ask you about the term mental health, but what does it mean to be a mental health counselor? What do you need? What have you guys, what's your background in terms of working with people? What does that entail?
Sure. So mental health counseling is, you know, I guess the easiest way to describe it is psychotherapy. So, you know, most people are familiar with kind of the traditional talk therapy model, where, you know, there's a therapist in the room with a chair and a couch, and, you know, the client is, you know, often sitting across from their therapist and kind of talking about things that they're, you know, struggling with, or, you know, maybe they're experiencing mental illness in some way, or have, you know, they're looking for some kind of change, they're experiencing some kind of stress. And so the traditional model of that is, you know, talk therapy. And so all mental health counselors are trained in various counseling modalities. We tend to be pretty focused on the client and identifying their strengths, as well as helping them identify a way of being in the world that might be a little different than what they're experiencing. And so we build relationships with our clients in order to help them become more or less stressed, feel build relationships with other people. So that's kind of the the more basic kind of description of mental health counseling as a profession.
The term mental illness. I'm a man who believes in political correctness. I just do, because to be less offensive to people, I think, is important. And the term mental illness kind of bothers me as a former educator, because it implies, I don't know, it just has a negative connotation, as opposed to, okay, you have a broken arm or you've been kicked in the stomach. But it's the same type of thing, is it not? Mental illness is not something that you ask for, that you say, okay, I can avoid this. It's involuntary.
Yeah, I think that the term mental illness has a stigma definitely associated to it, and I think the reason is because in the past we haven't really talked as much about it. We haven't had as much openness about struggles that people face with anxiety and depression. Often, it's perceived as something that someone could just kind of get over, or that there's something kind of permanently wrong with them. And I think, but that doesn't mean that mental illness or mental health hasn't been an issue, for as long as we have been, been able to have feelings and emotions. Mm-hmm. The way that I think about it is, mental health needs to be treated in the same way that we treat our physical health. So the mind and the body, they're connected. And so when we're, when we're physically ill, I think it's just easier to understand it,
right?
From our perspective, because we can see if someone is coughing or someone has a broken arm, or even if someone has diabetes, we can kind of understand that. We can see and kind of understand that a little bit more cognitively. It's additional something going on with our feelings and emotion and our mind, which is extension of our brain, right? But it's just a little bit harder to understand that. And so that's, I think, why there's been such a stigma around it, is because we often fear things that we don't understand. We tend to kind of not like to talk about things that we don't understand. So part of us being on the North Shore and opening this group practice is to try to reduce the stigma around mental illness. Let's talk about it. Let's talk about what that is. But not just mental illness, but mental wellness as well.
And is part of that, letting your clients, your patients understand that? Because, you mentioned the stigma, and that comes from people who are in families or who look at kids or whatever, who are having difficulties. But a person who wants to go to you maybe doesn't want to know, okay, well, it's part of your brain concept. It's part of your overall person. You didn't ask for this, but it shouldn't be a stigma. So part of your recovery and your therapy is to have the person understand where she or he is at?
I think it is really important to, and it's one thing, I've worked before opening the Art for Life. I worked in various community mental health agencies on the North Shore. And one of the things that I learned in that work is that I was working with people who, really struggled to get through the day, whether they were adults or children.
Mm-hmm.
And I found that therapy was something some people were being told, like, you have to do this, and feeling like, why do I have to do this? And so I developed this concept that I thought it was really important for people to be, educated consumers of this service. Therapy is a service. It's often a commitment. It can be challenging at times. And I do think there is some importance for mental health counselors to kind of, lift the veil of what this is and help people become educated consumers about mental health counseling. You know, and I think that at its core, what we do is we build relationships with people. And, you know, relationships are very individualized, but the relationship is really the most important piece of counseling, because it really helps that other person be seen in a way that they haven't been seen, validated for their experience. You know, again, when people are struggling with their mental health, it is often so challenging for them to put it into words. And I think that's where expressive arts therapy comes in, and it can be very valuable, is that, you know, the arts, you know, it's about describing the indescribable, whether it's just through colors or shapes or talking about texture or using metaphor or using movement. Like, these very tangible qualities of the arts are, you know, an excellent way to kind of describe these internal experiences that feel indescribable for words at times.
Wow. Okay. That was Madeline, right?
That was Natalie.
Oh, that was Natalie. Okay, I got it backed up. All right, that was Natalie. So Natalie, and Natalie Blue, what a name for a counselor, your last name, but we won't get into that for the moment. And Madeline Pario. You know, I met Amy Kerr. She works with an organization that she's got funding for called I Am More, and one of the things that she does is she has people come in, she takes photographs, and she has them write essays about themselves, and they do drawings and so on. Talking to now, I guess it's Madeline's turn. Tell me a little bit about a success story that you guys have run across, because you have a tremendous staff. It's a very big staff, and you have a diverse background with so many different people. But tell me something about a success story or two that we can relate to, and what is involved, because there's so much to talk about here and to learn about for me.
Yeah, so I mean, I think it's a little tricky to talk about specific success stories because of confidentiality. We really want to protect our clients' identities and their own, you know, have them, if they want to tell their stories, we don't want to be telling their stories for them. So there is that confidentiality and HIPAA that we are also bound to. However, you know, we wouldn't be in this practice and for so many years doing the work that we do if we didn't see success from it. There's just no way. There's a lot of tough stories that we sit with and we witness. And if we didn't see the success of the clients, in terms of their different insights that individuals might come up with on their own, using the arts, those aha moments where they say, aha, you know, I didn't realize this about myself, or I thought this about myself for so long, and now that I can think about it differently, it feels like a burden has been lifted. I feel lighter. I'm not afraid anymore. There's so many success stories I wish I could share, but I can't go into detail. But there's no way that we would be able to do this work and not to be able to see the benefits. And we work with children, we work with teens, we work with adults. And so it's really wonderful just from all the spectrum to see our tagline of our business is imaginable life. And I think that is where the success comes from a lot of the time is to start meeting with someone who, you know, they know that they've got themselves in the room, right? Or, you know, their parents got themselves them in the room, and they know they have a sense that they need to be there. But oftentimes they're not quite sure how to proceed, where to go. And using the expressive arts, we can help them visualize something different. It could be just a slight shift, but it could mean so much for them. Well, so I hope that answers a little bit. But there's just so much. We work with anxiety, depression, phobias, trauma, PTSD. We all have been trained in trauma-informed work. So it is a you know, it can be, you know, it can be tough to mm-hmm. sit with these stories, and but it is really wonderful and so worth it to see people's fear decrease, to hear that they're going outside more, to hear them interacting more, to have them have realizations about themselves where they have a much more positive mindset about themselves, where they are realizing that maybe things that happened to them in the past don't have to define them mm-hmm. anymore. When it comes to children, it's about, you know, helping them regulate themselves, find ways to express those emotions. Not that those feelings are bad, but that they can learn different ways to express those feelings and emotions so that people can hear them. And so their relationships with their families are improved, and there's less fighting at home. So I think, I hope that gives you some example of some of the work that we do.
Absolutely. And go ahead.
I have another example yep. to kind of put out there. So, you know, if you've ever heard the expression, you can't see the forest through the trees.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what we help people do is see the forest. I think when people are feeling overwhelmed or, you know, super stressed out or, you know, carrying around a lifetime of trauma, that they only see, you know, it's like tunnel vision. They only see what's right in front of them. They can only see the trees. One thing that I have done with folks, and I don't know if you've, you know, ever made art, but when people make art, you know, visual art in particular, you're standing like right over it really close. So it's really hard to, you know, you're kind of focused on the imperfections. And a lot of times what I do with people, and I use it as a metaphor to talk about life, is as I'll put the piece, their piece of art up, and I'll ask them to step back from it and mm-hmm. look at it from a distance. And when you look at a piece of art from a distance, you really get to see it. You get to see the whole thing. As opposed to when you're working on something and you're just in the details of it. And I think that, I feel like for us too, for therapy, is like helping people step back to see the bigger picture. And sometimes when they have that experience, and I think that, you know, doing it with a piece of visual art makes it really concrete, like, oh, I get it. I get what that metaphor means. And then they start to, like, think of ways that they can, you know, metaphorically step back from their own life to kind of have a broader view of things and a bigger perspective.
I get that. That's a great point, because sometimes you see one pixel, and then online or on a photo or whatever, you move back out, and then you see the whole universe, whereas just one pixel, you might see one little dot. So that certainly makes sense to me. And, guys, I want to ask you, I guess sort of as a wrap-up thing, what does a parent, an adult, a kid, what do they do to get your attention, to get into your program, covering insurance and so on, and to be evaluated, if that's the right word? How does one reach you guys? And then we'll talk about the move. You know, what is the process involved? Because I know that when my family was going through some difficult times, it was almost impossible to get someone immediately. It was impossible to get some treatment that we needed right away, but we didn't even know where to go. So what do you recommend?
Yeah. So, you know, for getting in touch with us, we try to be really active in social media. So, like you said, you found our website. We're also on Facebook and Instagram. However, the best way to get in touch with us for our services, and actually, again, like, it's been always really important to me to help people be a good consumer of mental health services. So you'll find on our website, like, an FAQ page about certain elements of, like, getting started at our practice, or what expressive arts therapy is and how it works differently for children versus adults. But the best way to get in touch with us is we have an intake coordinator. So that person's job is to kind of make sure that people receive prompt responses. You know, like, within 24 to 48 hours, a person will hear from our intake coordinator. And what Jen does is she reaches out to them. She gets kind of the basics on, like, you know, what's your insurance. And then she schedules a 20-minute phone consult. And so that time is, I think, one of the most frustrating things, like, for therapists who are in private practice, when you're really managing all that stuff on your own, is, like, finding the time to call someone. And, you know, I feel like, despite the fact that we have, you know, phones like surgically glued to our bodies.
Yeah.
We feel terrible about answering them when we don't see numbers that we recognize. So that's, we came up with the system about, you know, so then you like do these endless games of phone tag. So now we schedule via email a phone consult for someone so that they know to expect the call. Those calls last about 20 minutes, and Jen will kind of get all their information and ask some questions about, you know, what their goals are, what's going on right now, why they're in need of services. And then, you know, we try to do our best to place people with a therapist as quick as we can. And, you know, after school appointments are pretty tough to fill because, you know, a lot, those are like prime time and they go really fast. And that's part of the reason why we're expanding and moving is because there is a demand for our services. But we do our best to like maintain the wait list. Jen is great about checking in with people, you know, after, you know, if they have been on the wait list for a month, like, hey, are you still interested in services? But yeah, that's one of the most challenging pieces of counseling, like hearing people say, like, I've tried calling everyone and no one calls me back, or everybody's full. And, you know, we're in a mental health crisis right now in this country, and, you know, figuring out ways to be more responsive and is been a big part of our process as a group practice as we expand. Like, how do we get back to people in a more timely fashion?
Yeah, and this is what we're, you know, this is one of our goals that we've always said is we want to make mental health counseling accessible to as many people on the North Shore. That's why we accept insurance. We take most major insurances. We do out-of-network plans. Our intake coordinator gets back to people, like Natalie said, within 24 to 48 hours. So email or phone is the best way to reach us.
Mm-hmm.
If you go to a website, we have our main line, and we have our info at artfullifecenter.org. And then I know you're going to ask us about the expansion, but that's one of the main reasons why we're expanding is so that we can hire more Express Parts therapists. And our wait list is actually one of the shortest, probably the shortest in the area, but still a little bit of a wait. You know, it's right now it's probably about a month. People are calling us and they're saying, you know what, I'm going to wait because I'm calling around and those larger agencies are like 3 to 6 months.
Right.
So we're trying to make sure that people are getting seen as quick as possible. It's not a perfect science, but we're doing our best, and we hope when we move to Salem that will be part of it, is to keep that wait list down so people can get services as quick as they can.
Well, guys, I wish you nothing but the best. Is there anything else that you might want to mention maybe I didn't ask you about?
Yeah, so one of the exciting things, too, about moving to Salem is, so we're moving to, it's almost 8,000 square feet. It's two floors. We are continuing the mental health counseling, the individual and family. But then we're also adding two large group rooms. So we are really excited to be able to offer group programmings, groups, workshops, after-school programs. We're going to be doing some summer programming in the future. So if people want to go on our Facebook page and like our Facebook page, go to our website. We're going to be rolling out some really, really exciting therapeutic groups and creative groups, drama clubs. We have a lot of great things in the works.
That is fantastic. Natalie Blue and Madeline Pario, who are co-owners and expressive art therapists for the Artful Life Counseling Center and Studio, soon to be located in Salem, and I will link to the website here in this post. Thank you very much, ladies. With MSO News Sports, I'm Rick Moore. And thank you for listening in today. Tell people about us, please. And let us know what you think at msonewsports@gmail.com. msonewsports@gmail.com. My thanks to Natalie Blue and Madeline Pario for talking with us about their endeavor. Also to Jim Berry of the ECOC, past president and a field ornithologist at the Essex County Ornithological Club. Also to David Moon, the director of Joppa Flats Audubon Sanctuary up in Newburyport, the Newburyport area, and, of course, to our own Greg Verga for talking over some current events with us. Again, ideas for this program, connections, heard Tuesday mornings and Thursday mornings live at 10 a.m. here on MSO Sports, MSO News Sports. Email us at msonewsports@gmail.com. So, on behalf of Josh Arnold, Bill Newell, and our producer and engineer, Bill Proposky, I'm Rick Moore. See you Tuesday.